Athletic. Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, your Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne and I've got Chris Woff here with me. How are you doing, Chris?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. I'm not doing too badly. I just wanted to update everyone on George Culkin's coach situation because I know that everyone was fascinated.
Situation.
Because last week we had the sort of 90s hip-hop massive coach, but then this weekend I turn up at St James's Park, George is waiting to go on BBC's Football Focus, and he stood outside talking to Pete Rutzler, formerly known as Rutz the Relegator, dubbed by George himself, and he just turns to me and he says, "I think I'm going to go and change my coat." I was like, "What?" "So I think I'm going to go and change my coat." So George had turned up at the stadium with multiple outfits and then came inside and he changed his coat and then changed back his coat. So have you ever turned up to a football match, Taylor, with multiple outfits that you're going to change into during it?
Not recently, no.
No.
No, no, Chris, you're slightly misinterpreting the situation. I had brought multiple coats, but in order to wear them all at the same time because I had my famous
How many
heated.
Coats does a man need to wear at once?
Well, two.
Two coats? What kind of nonsense is this?
And a fleece.
I had a heated coat. And I topped that with a sort of slightly more outer garment. By the way, if you've not seen Football Focus from the weekend, I do urge you to watch it on iPlayer because that was the definitive 1 minute 23 seconds on Newcastle United.
It's gone down since Saturday.
Well, I've timed it. I've watched it back and timed it. I mean, and at which I was speaking for approximately 38 seconds. I would just urge you to watch it because it is just definitive TV gold.
But Taylor, the best bit about that is that as George was speaking, they actually cut his time as well. It was only maybe 2.5 minutes, and then as he's speaking, they just decided to cut it.
Yeah, well, I don't understand why, but as I was speaking, they decided to cut it down even further.
This idiot's clearly wearing too many coats. Get him off.
How many coats has he gone on? He looks like the Michelin man. Get him off.
Who's let this absolute lunatic in here?
Having watched it back, though, I'll tell you what I want for Christmas, and that is Botox. So if we know any friendly doctors who are able to jab me with a little bit of Botox, that would be lovely. Thank you very much. I'll give you a nice shout-out on the pod in
Good
return.
Stuff. There we go.
How are you, Taylor?
Yeah, I'm all right. I think I might have slept funny last night because I've got a proper pain in my neck. I feel like Raul Jimenez has smashed us in the face with his arse during the night. That's what it feels like. It's just killing me today. I'm all sort of stiff and weird. It's not nice. But
well, speaking of little pain in the necks, here's Chris.
Yeah. Anyway, let's crack on, chaps.
Come on, you Maggies.
Newcastle were looking to bounce back from the European exit with a 3 p.m. Saturday kickoff against Fulham, or Fulham, if you're a fan of the movie Goal. You remember that one, George? You've seen Goal, haven't you?
I've seen Goal and Goal 2, yeah, I have. I'm fully fledged up member of the Goal fan club.
Excellent. And it was good news as well. Sven Botman came back into the squad. Obviously, this being Newcastle, also known as a season-long football-themed episode of Casualty. Fabian Scher pulls up lame after 12 minutes, doesn't he, Chris? It just goes from bad to worse, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, there's always rumour mills before Newcastle matches as to who's available and who isn't. And Fabian Scher was one of the rumours that he might not have been available. And he has been struggling with quite a few little niggles here and there. He obviously had pulled his hamstring a couple of times in previous matches or tweaked it, and he was the only remaining Newcastle United player to, up till that 12th minute, played every single minute of both the Premier League and Champions League campaign so far. Kieran Trippier was the only other player to have started every other Premier League game, and he obviously was suspended, so Newcastle lost the two ever presents, and that was massive. I mean, the Scher one was quite dramatic. It was interesting afterwards as Howe came out and he reiterated it this morning at his pre-match Chelsea press conference, and he was saying that, yeah, we don't think it's too bad, because it was very dramatic how he pulled up.
It looked bad.
Yeah, it was almost like a sort of sniper situation where it looked like someone had caught, and he really did pull up, and he kicks the ball away and then goes down. So hopefully that isn't too bad. It's a glute issue, I think, was what Howe said that it was. Mm. But yeah, that was frustrating. But for Sven Botman to be back in the squad was a huge boost, and he wasn't the player that Howe initially turned to at that point, I think just simply because they didn't want to risk him for that long. He's only just come back in action. Instead, he came on once the game was already won, but having back in the squad was a huge boost. And instead, what Howe did was he completely changed the back four. It was almost everyone shifted position. So Dan Byrne, who was his first start back after 6 weeks out with a back injury, coming back early, having admitted both to me last week and then in the programme notes that he'd come back sooner than ideally he would have liked, given the need for him to be back. He moved into left-sided centre-back alongside Jamal Lascelles. Tino Livramento switched from right back, which he'd moved to, having played left back the last few weeks, to left back. And then at right back, Emil Kraft came on. And so within 12 minutes...
Everything changes, yeah. Sometimes it's starting to feel a little bit like one step forward and two steps back, George, isn't it, with some of the injuries. They just keep coming again and again and again.
Yeah, I mean, it's one step forward, two hobbles back, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that's it.
Because, of course, Newcastle lost Gillington before half-time as well, and... Yeah, you're starting to think it's going to be one of those days. They needed a big response. I thought it was a great atmosphere, kind of a round kickoff. It was really good. And then, you know, those things happen that, you know, and they can sort of suck the atmosphere away, because you have those stoppages, you have a break in play, everyone sort of breathes out a little bit, and you then see the team trying to sort of regroup and reorganise, and you kind of get that sort of, oh no, it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be one of those kind of days. It was great to see Sean Longstaff back in the team. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Lewis Miley came on. We saw what he did, and that was a fantastic moment. We'll talk more about him in a bit, but, you know, Sean Longstaff is so important to the team. Had a great chat with him afterwards as well. We'll hear a bit of that. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when you're stretched. The players who are kind of having to play too much are then more susceptible to injury as well. I would say that I was hanging around in the sort of dugout area after the match to, you know, you wait there to speak to players. Gillington walked past. He didn't look too bad. He said, we'll see, when he was asked sort of how he would be, if he would be okay for Chelsea. Fabian Scher, however, was limping quite heavily and did look in discomfort. They were both due to be having scans today, Chris. I think that was right.
Yes, they're having scans later on today, so no update. Although Eddie Howe, he said he almost didn't want to tempt fate and say that they don't appear too bad, but that appears to be the situation at this stage.
There was like an audible, oh, for fuck's sake, when Fabian Scher went down, wasn't it? It sort of echoed round the ground, and every fan's just thinking, here we go again, you know, and it's just happening every single week now. The injuries, they could have made the day really hard for Newcastle, couldn't they? Even with Raul Jimenez completely taking leave of his senses in the first half, Chris. It was a moment of madness.
It was a moment of madness. I mean, before we actually got on the red card, when you say it could have made the day really hard, even with Raul Jimenez taking leave of his senses, the interesting thing, and I know a lot of people roll their eyes at this, but almost the universal response, other than I think from Jamal Lascelles, who said it made the game easier, is Sean Longstaff, Dan Byrne, Bruno Guimaraes, Eddie Howe all said that actually in some ways that makes the game slightly more difficult. I mean, I think Dan Byrne used the phrase that it killed us, actually, that when Jimenez was sent off. And basically, I think what he meant was, A, there's still relatively fresh memories of that Liverpool game that Newcastle played for 62 minutes, winning 1-0 and eventually lost 2-1. I know it isn't against Liverpool, it's against Fulham, but still, how do you manage that match against 10 men? But also, the focus then for Fulham is very much, if they'd been caught between two stools beforehand, Fulham's focus then is just survival mode. We just stay in this game and see how we can get, and let's see if Newcastle can break us down. And the longer the game goes on, the nerves that were already there, Eddie Howe referenced after the match, and I think he basically used the phrase that this game was set up for us to fail, given what had happened in midweek against AC Milan, given the previous Premier League matches that Newcastle lost back-to-back away games and conceded 7 goals in the process, given all the injuries, given the challenges that they had, and so that Jimenez didn't actually getting sent off didn't actually help them, at least initially.
Let's come back and talk about the actual challenge in a minute, but that was something that I wanted to talk about, that, you know, when you've got those two injuries, when you've got the red card, so effectively at 3 points in that first half, Newcastle have kind of ripped up a plan, have had to rip up a plan and start again. And I think,
yeah,
A, that was the thing that caused me sort of concern in the first half. Ultimately, you know, they problem solved. They were able to kind of get out of that. And, you know, again, that was something that I talked to Sean Longstaff about afterwards. And he sort of said that, he said, we didn't quite get lost in the first half, but that players got sort of individual and you go to the wrong places at the wrong time. Everything is, as Chris said, the back four is mixed up. The plan that you've worked out with one player in midfield changes again, and then suddenly the opposition, who came with the game plan, have had to kind of reorganise as well. And it took until half time for Howe to get to his players and sort of reorganise them, tell them what they should be doing, where they should be going. And it was a kind of very different performance in the second half, I thought. And ultimately, yeah, it had that feel of it going to be one of those days. I think the impressive thing is that by the end of the day, they had worked out, you know. And I think that's something that Newcastle have been good at under Eddie Howe, in-game management. If Saka attacks Dan Burn in the first minute at Arsenal, you think, oh, this is going to be a testing one for him. But the team work out how to cover him and how to protect him. And then by the end of that day, the performance at Arsenal, I'm talking about last season, was very different. I think they've been very, very good at doing that. And they had to do it three times over on Saturday. On the red card, though, I mean, it is one of the sort of most astonishing things I've seen. It's like he's anticipating Sean jumping as well, and therefore, and he doesn't, and therefore it just looks really weird. Sean referenced an ice hockey player that his dad used to play with. His dad was a very good ice hockey player and he urged reporters to look up this ice hockey player on YouTube, because he just did these smashes. He went in for these went into these challenges, and I have watched it, and it just was kind of baffling what he was trying to do. I've got no idea.
In real time, in the ground, it looked fairly innocuous, but I was quite far away from it. And then when I saw the replay on the screen and you see how high he is, the only thing I can think he's trying to do is block Longstaff from lifting the ball over him. That's all I could think. But he doesn't need to be that far off the ground. And as soon as he's off the ground, he's completely out of control.
But the weirdest bit about the whole thing is that the ball, when he's left the ground, the ball hasn't left Longstaff's feet. So I suppose that's one, I suppose, slight, tiny bit of mitigation. But Longstaff is facing the other way, passes the ball a different direction and along the ground. It was just completely reckless. I mean, to throw you, but I know he almost sort of tries to pull out of it. And in some ways, the way that he contorts his body and he goes like backside first into Sean Longstaff's face, that's the pulling out of it almost makes it more difficult because Longstaff is so caught out by surprise by the whole thing. And afterwards there was various people, I think it was Danny Murphy on Match of the Day, referenced the incident which had happened a couple of minutes before, which was Jamal Lascelles on Jimenez. And I think Jimenez had been getting increasingly frustrated because Lascelles had won quite a few balls in the air early on. And aside from what was an absolutely spectacular attempt at an overhead kick from Jimenez from outside the box, he hadn't had much joy out of Lascelles, and there was obviously the elbow to the face moment. Now, whether that was, I don't think that was necessarily a red card, but I could understand why Jimenez felt it was certainly at least a foul, and he didn't get that. And I think that he'd maybe just lost his head a little bit, but that doesn't explain. I mean, the red mist is completely descended if what happens afterwards happens. You can almost see that he's surprised by what happens afterwards. It was just very, very, very odd.
You referenced Jamal Lascelles there, Chris, and albeit I'm just inserting this, but I just think it's worth talking about how good he was on Saturday. I thought
he was fabulous.
I thought he was absolutely excellent. And there was a brilliant tribute from War Flags beforehand. You know, not their biggest display ever, but there was that kind of lovely phrase, Championship to Champions League, and there was a picture of Jamal above that pointing to the captain's armband. And, you know, I think this week of all weeks, that was a very good piece of perspective about where the team, where the club has come from and where it's got to, way ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought Lascelles, he's had some tough moments in this run back in the team, but I just thought he was really, really excellent and did absolutely lead by example against Fulham.
He did, and with Trippier not being there as well, you need someone to step up, don't you? Because he's kind of an on-field leader, and Jamal did that brilliantly. He put his head on everything, didn't he? He got his head to everything. I think you could have launched a skip full of wall bricks towards the Gallagher end, and he would have jumped and headed it away over the East Stand. That's the kind of mood he was in. Nothing was getting past him, and he was fabulous. He was absolutely brilliant. Another player who was wonderful as well on Saturday, we had several chances, didn't we? And then 17-year-old Lewis Miley pops up, finds himself a bit of space after some brilliant work by Bruno Guimarães on the edge of the box. Bit of a narrow angle, but absolutely no problem from him, and he smashes it in the bottom corner. What a moment that is, George. And one of my favourite moments of the last couple of seasons, I have to be honest, to see Lewis score that goal.
Yeah, there have been some incredible moments in matches in that time. And I think probably it's the local lads who've kind of hogged a lot of those sort of special moments. Dan Burns scoring, Sean Longstaff scoring, and this was just absolutely up there. He was, you know, as Sean said afterwards, he was very, very unlucky to lose his place in the team. He's been really, really good. Like everybody else, he probably needed a rest. And I think at 17 years old, albeit he doesn't play like a 17-year-old, I think that's probably, you know, I think that was probably the right decision. And as I say, Longstaff's running and energy is so important to the team. But he comes on and does that, and yeah, just absolutely brilliant. He had to be pushed back to the Gallagate to sort of celebrate. And Chris has actually written a really good piece, which I'd urge people to read, about both Miley and Bruno and about how the two dovetail together, and it's sort of master and apprentice. And just a wonderful, wonderful moment for him, and I'm sure the first of many more.
I mean, Chris, that work by Bruno in the lead-up to that goal as well was brilliant, wasn't it? Miley doesn't have to do an awful lot apart from put it in the corner. And just a wonderful moment for the lad. And he's just getting better and better, isn't he? He's scarily good for his age.
Oh, he is. And nothing seems to faze him. And technically, he's just very, very sound. Jacob Whitehead, who unfortunately is on his sickbed.
Never heard of him.
So sending well wishes to him.
Who?
Not so much for his club. Yeah,
who?
But he did tweet during the Man United game that Rasmus Højlund had almost a very similar chance to Lewis Miley, and he doesn't finish it, and it looks like an easy finish, but the composure he has, there doesn't seem that at any point he's ruffled by the situation he's in, and yet that was
never looks flustered, does he? Never.
How referenced it, Bruno Guimarães. Every single person who spoke after the match from internally at Newcastle referenced how big a moment that was, not just in the match for Newcastle, but potentially in their season. As we've already said, as George has mentioned, they had to problem solve. And Newcastle first half had 72% possession and did very little with it. They actually had slightly less possession in the second half against Fulham, 69%, but they were far, far better. They created far more chances, 15 shots after the break, 8 of them on target. They ended with the highest XG they've had all season in a home match, whereas first half they had less than one of an XG. Now, I know people don't necessarily like XG, but there we go in terms of they had Fulham penned in, and I know that's also to do with tiredness. Also, I'm going to counter myself here. They were going down the hill towards the Gallagher and Fulham couldn't get out in the second half.
Uh-huh.
So there we go.
How the turntables.
Reason, I mean, obviously Lewis Miley was the headline, Newcastle's youngest ever Premier League goal scorer, the youngest scorer in the Premier League since Federico Makeda, which just, I mean, is astonishing of its own accord as well. I mean, he's joined a heck of a list there in terms of historic young goal scorers in the Premier League, and he's a midfielder, and he's already been around for a few months for Newcastle, and yet he is still that young, which shows how young he was when he broke in and came on against Chelsea in the last game of last season. But between him and Bruno, I think that the two of them combined so well, because Miley takes the big moment, but it's Bruno Guimarães who drives Newcastle forward and gets them in that position. And Howe said afterwards it needed someone to take the game by the scruff of the neck and had to win it for them. And I thought that player was Bruno. The build-up to that goal, the way that he starts it by playing it out to the left to Tino Livramento. He receives the ball back. He then out-muscles João Palhinha. He goes beyond three other players. And yes, he gets a bit of a lucky ricochet off Robinson, but he drags Robinson towards him. And then the ball goes through to Miley, and Miley has the space to then be able to finish calmly, and that is Bruno driving them forward. He had an involvement in all three goals. He starts the move, which then eventually leads to Miggy's bizarre goal. We'll get on to that in a second in terms of how that came about. And then he also provides what I thought was a brilliant description by Shea Given on Match of the Day as a Norberto Solano-esque outside of the foot cross into the box. For
Chris is just going through every single item on our running order.
No, we can go into the ins and outs of the goal, but Bruno was central to every single part of that.
There's nothing left to do.
We finished now.
Just ruined the podcast, Chris.
Someone had to take control of this podcast. Someone had to take it by the scruff of the neck and make sure we got through.
No, Chris, can you please just say The Athletic? Just say The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Right, that's the whole podcast done. Let's just stop now.
That's us for this week. We'll be back.
Good night.
Yeah, after the Chelsea game.
Right.
Thanks for that, Chris.
You're very welcome.
So where the fuck do we go to after that?
I still think we can talk about the Almiron goal. There's a build-up to it, and also the Burn goal itself still we can talk about because he sort of battles into it. We can still talk about all of those points. I was just mentioning Bruno was involved in them all.
Just mentioning them all in passing to make it look like we're then massively repeating ourselves.
And then mention the sheer given Solano thing as well. That's that fucked as well, isn't it?
I hadn't seen that. I haven't had the chance to look at the running order. Oh,
man.
But listen, about half an hour ago when we were talking about Lewis Miley, before Chris opened his mouth, I talked about Sean Longstaff, but I asked him about Lewis Miley. This is what he said.
You said back at the Amazon preview, you said, you know, it's not all about Sandro, there's a kid called Lewis Miley. I mean, and it was like a lovely thing to say, but I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure how much we would have taken that seriously.
Yeah, there's a reason he's been around for so long, and there's a reason that the squad speaks so highly of him, and he's just ridiculously good. Like, the way he receives the ball, passes it, he's a good size, and he's even comes in there and like you kind of tell that he's just scored. He's just like he's put his head down, like he's the typical 17-year-old kid, and just literally sat there like it's just he's used to doing it, and yeah, like I said, just really happy for him. He's such a humble kid, and he's got all the talent in the world. So yeah, really lucky to have him. He's definitely got his feet on the ground. I think that's probably 90% of it, if you don't get sort of carried away and keeps working hard and yeah, keeps enjoying his football. I think the main thing is to enjoy it, not put too much pressure on himself, because there probably will be a time where it sort of dips a little bit, but that's just natural. But for us, we're hoping that doesn't happen, and for him, like I said, if you just sort of keep the sort of level head that he's got, he'll be fine.
Are you mentoring him a bit?
Yeah, to be honest, you sort of try and speak to him and help him, but more of it just asking if he's okay, does he need anything, like. And yeah, the football sort of takes care of itself. He's in a good place. Like I said, he's got great people around him, whether it be Trips next to him or Bruno or Miggy. And then you've got the staff around him as well who are always speaking to him. And yeah, it's funny, you had the safeguarding officer in yesterday, like making sure that everyone's treating him all right in the change room. It's because he's under 18, but he's like, is everyone's doing everything right in front of him and stuff? And you think, like, it's, how can you go from checking he's okay to being the best player on the Saturday?
Did you say before that his goal could be the kickstart this season? Is that how you sort of approach this game, the rest of the season starts?
Yeah, then? I think Mahatu, the European journey was amazing, but I think, like I said, it's obviously over now, unfortunately, and I've learned a lot of lessons from being in the competition, but ultimately, if I want to put them lessons into place, you have to be in it again next year. And had a really good meeting yesterday as to how we get back there and what points we need and stuff like that. And we said it all starts today. It's a massive week coming up. So, yeah, we know if we win our next three games in the league, that'll look very, very different at the table. So, yeah, like I said, it's a massive game starting today. And fortunately for us, we're started well.
A little word for Miguel Almiron as well. He's been getting a little bit of stick lately. He has been a little bit inconsistent with his performances. But he pops up at the right place at the right time and puts the ball in the net when he needed to. Hilarious though, Chris, if you saw Callum Wilson was still appealing for a penalty while Miguel Almiron was running away celebrating, wasn't he? He didn't look happy that he didn't get his chance.
No, I think that he actually didn't want Almiron to put the ball in the back of the net. I mean, it was a very, very odd... I've not seen many goals like
use
that.
Use your right foot, Miggy. Use your right. Go for it. You're right.
But it's also like Fulham just don't see, most of the Fulham players just don't seem to know that the ball's still in play either. It's as if that, I don't know if they've, I mean, I think if Robinson hadn't really gone for the ball, I think it looks like it is a penalty. But equally, Almiron is there to get the goal. It comes from Gordon, plays the lovely ball through to Wilson, who, before he can get the touch, Robinson is close on him, although Leno was also off his line. I mean, you mentioned Almiron and has sort of been a bit of criticism recently. When I actually, at the press conference this morning, previewing Chelsea, I asked Eddie Howe about Almiron because he looked extremely relieved from the goal. His initial reaction is almost to look up the heavens, and quite a few players referenced it and said how pleased they were for Almiron. So I think it was really playing on his mind that he hadn't scored, and Howe referenced, he said, off the top of my head, Everton, Tottenham, big chances he had. He did not mention AC Milan. Now, I don't know whether he generally forgotten it or whether that was deliberately not mentioning that, given how big a moment that was. But I think that for Almiron, he was how very much defended Almiron's recent performances. And I do think up until those back-to-back away games, I do think Almiron had been playing very, very well. I said this a few weeks ago, that even though he wasn't scoring, I thought he was contributing a heck of a lot. And again, he was everywhere yesterday in terms of energy and trying things. And it doesn't always come off. His decision-making's not always there. But he's so important to what Newcastle do in so many different ways. And he gets that goal, and that just gave Newcastle the breathing space that they needed. And from the first goal, there was very little doubt. But once that second one went in, there was never any doubt Newcastle winning the match.
I totally agree with Chris. I think it was really important. I thought he was exceptionally poor at Spurs. I mean, I think a lot of people fell into that category. But this was the kind of Almiron that Chris has secretly been hoping to come to the fore to 4 years down the line, finally prove him right, in spite of the compliments he's just given him. But, you know, he was not good at Spurs. And then there was that big miss against Milan. But when he's firing, when his running is focused, he is one of the heartbeats of the team. He sets the tempo with that running. It's so valuable. You understand completely why teammates would love him and be wanting for him to do well, because he gets them out of trouble. And he's such a valuable part of things. So yeah, that was very important and very good for him. So hopefully that's now the end of that bit of poor form and the start of a bit of run of goals.
As Chris mentioned before, when he drove a train through the middle of our running order, Bruno, he was involved in all three goals, wasn't he? And Dan Byrne refused to take no for an answer at the back post after some lovely improvisation from Bruno. A beautiful ball in the shape on that, and Dan Byrne just bundles it into the net, basically, Chris, doesn't he? He wasn't taking no for an answer.
He wasn't. And again, if I can extend my previous answer, the set piece that this initially comes from is also Bruno's set piece. So Crafu, as I think Newcastle termed him afterwards, Emil Kraft, flicked the ball beyond, I think it's Dikadova Reed in the corner, and wins the free kick. Miguel Almiron had actually put quite a heavy pass towards him, and Kraft had done quite well to keep it in. But Bruno centres the ball, it gets cleared, Almiron tries to shoot, that sort of gets blocked a little bit, and then Bruno Guimaraes is on the right hand, inside the box on the right hand side, and just looks up, and with the right outside of his right foot, sort of swings the almost like an outswinger around the ball and catches it with the outside of his foot, and absolutely beautiful, the back post. And yes, Dan Byrne rises, and initially his chance, his effort is saved by Leno, but then he manages to react and get it over the line. And yeah, big moment for him, first start back, as we've said, after 6 weeks, and just sort of really tipped off what was a very good second half for Newcastle. I mean, the thing about, I just want to quickly speak about set pieces, and we spoke about Kieran Trippier not being in the team, and I think that you saw, particularly in that first half, that the issue that also brings, because I know some Newcastle fans have been frustrated by Trippier, and sometimes they say his delivery isn't good enough, but Newcastle score a lot of goals from set pieces, or they have a lot of chances at least from set pieces, and certainly last season they missed a lot of them. And you take Trippier out of there, and suddenly it was, who's going to take these set pieces? And it was a combination of Gordon and Guimaraes and various different other players. Because if you think about it, the next two takers probably would be Matt Target, if he was fit and available and actually starting, which he doesn't always, and Sandro Tonali, who is seen as a bit of a set piece specialist for Italy under 21s, and Newcastle don't have any of them, so they didn't have that huge attacking threat.
Fabian Scher for free kicks as well.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, sure. Well, yes, Scher even went off. So in terms of attacking free, because he tried one early on, a sort of an attacking free kick shooting from. So Newcastle were deprived again of another key part of what they do, and they still found a way to get through it.
Two very, very quick things. Obviously, a fantastic moment for Dan to score. But just to reiterate what Chris had said earlier, you know, Dan said in the programme notes, he's weeks, come back weeks earlier than probably he should have done.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, I think that is sort of emblematic of this team and this squad. They do literally put their bodies on the line for each other. He wanted to come back. He said, you know, that's not a luxury we can afford at the minute. Wanted to come back. So I think, you know, I do think that's worth emphasising. And the other thing is that Emil Kraft was excellent.
He was.
And he's come back into the team and squad in recent weeks, but, you know, this was a Premier League game, and I just, you know, this was reminiscent of the Emil Kraft we saw at the end of the takeover relegation season, who came in for Trippier and was in the form of his career. It's a great story. story. He's had to work really, really hard, and he's been through some very dark times during that time out. But he's a lovely lad, and I just thought he was really excellent. And part of that, you know, part of the reshuffling is including players who, you know, haven't been at match fitness or have been injured. And anyway, I just thought those things are definitely worth pointing out.
Absolutely. I mean, I saw a lovely quote from Eddie Howe as well about Emil Coughlin, about how he trusts him to bring him onto the pitch and he'll do a job for him. And Kraft will come on and he'll play centre-half and he'll play right-back and you'll get no whinging out of him. He seems like a really great pro, doesn't he? He's just Johnny on the spot. He'll just get stuck in and he'll do what he needs to do.
I mean, the other difficult thing for him must have been not just Trippier being so important, so integral, but then of course over the summer Newcastle have brought in two new young fullbacks who are seen as the future of the team, the future of the club, and you know he's had that to contend with as well. But he's incredibly solid, and you know, I just thought that was a really excellent performance.
Just to piss on everyone's chips is my rule. I can see that the Champions League last 16 draw is going on at the minute, and PSG have just drawn Real Sociedad. So, yeah.
Thanks for that, Chris.
Okay. You're very welcome. You're very welcome indeed.
Yeah. Brought nothing but misery today, have you?
That's what I'm here for.
Used to be my job.
Right, I'm not sure how we're getting into this next bit. Give me 2 seconds. So, two more injuries, a slight dampener, but a fantastic result. And it's 7 consecutive Premier League wins at St James's Park, conceding just 1 goal, George. The form's there, isn't it? The form is there at home. We've just got to sort the away form out.
Yeah, they're just absolutely formidable at home. I mean, it's a brilliant record. It's their best run at home for 20 years in the Premier League. And it's important too, because, as you say, the away form is dragging them down. And if they, you know, if they're going to get to where they want to get to, where they need to get to, you know, they've got to find some way of improving away from St James's Park. They've tasted the Champions League. They've experienced it. It was brilliant. It ended too soon. And now there's a real determination to kind of get back there. That was a brilliant start. It's yet another big, big week. But it was very important that they drew a line under 3 defeats in a row. And yeah, ultimately St James's, and they responded, which they're so good at doing.
Chris, we're in the top 6, aren't we? On course for Europe, staying in touch with the Champions League places, however many that may end up being. And if you want a boring, dry discussion about coefficients, Chris Woff is the man for that, isn't he?
Yes, well, you're very welcome to bring me in on the points that George just will not engage with.
Facts.
I mean, just speaking about the Champions League draws, it looks like so Man City have drawn Copenhagen, and Arsenal have also had drawn Porto, I think. So in terms of them potentially progressing, it looks like they have a decent chance, and that should help the coefficient. Also, the teams doing well in lower competitions means that it should aid Newcastle's push the Premier League's push for 5 places next season. I mean, Newcastle really can't rely on that. All Newcastle can do is try and finish as high as they can on the table.
Yeah.
You get in the top 4, that would guarantee you it. 5th place may bring you something, but Newcastle are a little bit adrift of those positions at the minute. The table is concertinaing a little bit. West Ham are only 2 points behind Newcastle now, which, given some of their recent results, is a little bit surprising. But those back-to-back away defeats were damaging for Newcastle. It's a very, very difficult January to come. So the next 2 Premier League matches, you would say Luton and Nottingham Forest, Newcastle need to try and get as maximum points if possible. But given the away form, which I'm going to look into more this week with the Athletics data team, to try and find out why that there is such a disparity, because Eddie Howe said this morning if he knew exactly what it was, he would have sorted it by now. So he doesn't think it's just one thing. But clearly that is an issue, and that's what's preventing them from really pushing further into that top 6, and why they are at the minute just in that 6th position, and quite a few teams on just a few points around them.
Absolutely. And Lewis Miley's name, George, had rung around St James's Park, hadn't it, during that second half. But 52,000 Geordies were sent to Whamageddon at the final whistle, weren't they?
They were. Does Whamageddon need to be explained to people? I don't know. It's this sort of new Christmassy tradition that you try and put off hearing last Christmas.
Yeah.
By Wham to the last possible moment. I don't know why. Why?
For a bit of fun, George.
For a bit of fun, and then once you've heard it once, you can then keep listening to it
as much as you want.
But you're sort of you're ruled out of the game of Whamageddon if you hear it beforehand or something.
It has to be the official version, apparently. Like the original.
It has to be the official version. Anyway, so what happened in the game? So it's after that tense and slightly bitty opening to the match, and is it going to be one of those days? By the end, it was, you know, a pretty happy and upbeat and festival kind of atmosphere. And yeah, St James's Park was ringing to the sound of people. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, but the very next day you gave it away. This year, to save me from tears, I'll give it to Jason Tindall. And it was very, very funny. And I know that. And so what happens sort of over the course of the game is that there's dialogue between Newcastle's communications team and Rob in the box, who does the music. And there was great debate about whether that should be the song that came over the stadium speakers at the final whistle, in the full knowledge that it would send everybody who was in attendance to Whamageddon. But they did indeed play it, and it was very good.
It was so much a talking point that Eddie Howe was actually asked about in his post-match press conference. And I mean, this, first of all, I'm going to say that I tweeted out some of his response, and of all of the tweets I've had recently, this is by far bizarrely had the most. It's had 150 retweets and 1.7K likes, which is just, I mean, found this fascinating. But basically, Howe seemed to imply that, it was quite strange, his answer, that I had no idea what was going on. I have no idea what it means. I mean, it's like, well, have you never heard the original song? You are a massive Aha fan, I realise, but have you not heard the Wham?
Was he not talking about Whamageddon, which also I've not really explained very well?
Possibly nobody was asked about Jason Tindall's reaction, basically. It wasn't the post-match, it was like his reaction. And then he said, Jason is still singing it in the dressing room. So it seems that Jason Tindall loved it, yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Oh, charity Christmas single on the way from Jason Tindall, I would imagine.
Eddie Howe, big Aha fan. I'm sure Wham, it must be very much on his playlist.
You would have thought so.
Yeah, or maybe he doesn't like Wham, and because they were like, you know, Aha's rivals. That's very similar sort of music, isn't it? So maybe, yeah.
Cry wolf.
Talking about Chris. I've never heard of Wham. I don't recognise Wham as a thing. Not sure what you mean there. Yeah. Anyway, let's see if we can find a little clip of it and we'll go into the break. We'll be back in just a minute. Give your loved ones the gift of The Athletic this year for Christmas. Go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod before January 1st and choose between £19.99, and that's pounds, dollars or euros, for a one-year subscription, or £39.99 for 2 years. So Becky Langley's Newcastle women ended their year on a high, 11 goals, including hat-tricks for Jazz McQuaid and Bridget Galloway. Here's Becky Langley and Jazz McQuaid after the game.
11-3, what a game today. The goals kept coming.
Yeah.
Two hat-tricks in there, sending off in there. We had it all going on. How do you feel everything went today?
Yeah, it was a strange game of football, wasn't it? I think, you know, delighted to score 11 goals. You know, to get to double figures in any game shows the dominance in the game, but a strange one to concede three. But, yeah, I think credit to Fylde. Those three finishes were three excellent finishes from nowhere. So, yeah, two hat-tricks, brilliant from Jazz and Bridget, and a real good team effort from everybody. We've worked really hard across the last 6 months to be in this position, so it feels fantastic now to have that five-point gap top of the league.
I think we just took this game, and we knew if we won, we would be 5 points clear. And it was just about going forward, seeing if we could get our goal difference up as well, and that's what we've done. So, yeah, we're just buzzing.
So the Lasses finished 2023 unbeaten, and they've got that trip to Manchester United in the FA Cup to look forward to. Could we be any more optimistic for 2024, George?
I mean, they're our very own Invincibles, aren't they? I mean, it's just an absolutely astonishing achievement to get through a whole calendar year unbeaten. And it tells a story of what's going on in that part of the club. You know, regular listeners will know how much we care about this and how highly we rate Becky Langley and her team. They're great people. They're doing unbelievable things. And yeah, it's just a fantastic It's just fantastic to be around it and to be witnessing this happening. It lifts everybody. If you go to a game at Kingston Park or wherever they're playing, you just kind of get this feeling of uplift and this feeling of possibility and power, and there's just so much more to come. It's absolutely brilliant. So well done to everybody. Have a great Christmas. Hope they get some time off and can enjoy it a little bit, because that is a phenomenal achievement.
Absolutely brilliant. Right, then, the games are coming thick and fast, chaps, and we've barely had time to enjoy Saturday's win before a Carabao Cup quarter-final against Chelsea rears its head. And it's Eddie Howe's 100th game in charge, Chris.
It is indeed, yes, and quite the transformation during that time. I mean, his first 10 matches...
Unbelievable.
Yeah, his first 10 matches were a struggle. There was only one win during that time, and yet the 90 since has been, I don't know the exact percentages of it, but it must, the win percentage has been huge. And Newcastle now, as we've already said, I mean, Champions League very much in the conversation to try and get back there this season. And yeah, quite the, he didn't realise that the statistic was there. He said it's flown by, but part of the reason why there's so many is because this season Newcastle have been progressing in competition. They've progressed to the Carabao Cup final last season, they're in the quarter final this year, and they've had 6 Champions League matches as well, which has really totted them up. And yeah, hopefully from a Newcastle United point of view and from Eddie Howe point of view, the first 100 milestone and a lot more to come in terms of if he can take the team where he believes and wants to take the team to.
Yeah, and he had a press conference this morning, George, didn't he? And he said, with regards to the injuries, we thought we were through the worst of it. You're not. You're right in the middle of the worst of it.
Yeah, I mean, he will play his strongest team. I mean, he kind of always says that before cup games. If you go back to the previous round, to the Man United away game, that meant fielding every single fullback on Newcastle United's books. Yeah, it did. And it also meant a very, very famous victory. I'm sure he would love to make some changes. Some of the people that he brought into the team last time are, of course, injured. You know, Matt Target got injured very early in that match. Joe Willock, who started, is out. Will we see people like Paul Dummett? Will we see Lewis Hall? Will we see Kraft again? Will we see Matt Ritchie? Those are the decisions that he has to take. It becomes a really, really important game, I think, with the Champions League now gone and Europe now gone, because, you know, it's the easiest, quickest route to get back into Europe. And there is this burning desire within the Newcastle squad to go one better. It's a really, really tough balancing act, and on days like that I don't envy Eddie Howe, but you know, there will be a fierce determination to try and get through.
And Pochettino will be a confident mood, won't he, Chris? Cole Palmer may be the man to watch for Chelsea. He's playing well at the moment.
He is, although I thought Newcastle dealt with him very well at St James's Park, although as we know this is very different. I mean, Newcastle's record at Stamford Bridge, other than the Papi Cisse game 11 years ago with the two stunners, and also the League Cup victory 4-3 in, I think that was 2010, surely I got a couple, and Newcastle won 4-3. Their record there is appalling in basically the Premier League era. I think they've only won once there in the Premier League era, which was the Cisse winner. So it's going to be a very different match, but also Newcastle go there with a lot of pedigree, both in this competition this season and last season. How he said after the game on Saturday he was going to play his strongest team. He sort of quantified that a little bit today when he was asked what, basically by saying, well, yeah, but it's a difficult question to answer your strongest team, because a lot of managers will argue in certain situations that they have multiple strongest teams, or it depends on the situation. And obviously Newcastle, even though they've had a couple of players come back, they've lost another couple and so don't have loads of options for this match. But Howe was also asked this morning specifically, given the fixtures coming up in January when Newcastle have the Weir Town Derby in the FA Cup, they go to Man City. They've got Man City at home. They go to Liverpool. They go to Aston Villa.
Yeah.
Is there not a small part of you that wants the actual winter break you could have that week off rather than the Carabao Cup two semi-finals mixed in there? And he basically replied saying, there is not a single shred of me that wants that. He said he also then went on to say that as tough as part of this has been, for Newcastle to eventually become the team he wants them to be and everyone wants them to be, they need to improve, and these matches have forced them to improve, to have this level of opposition so frequently. And so Eddie Howe is going there determined to win. He wants to win a trophy in Newcastle. The sooner they can do that, the better, in terms of lifting pressure and also aiding their growth going forward. And so this is a difficult tie. They've had difficult ties in every single round, and undoubtedly if they get through, they'll get a very difficult one.
They'll beat Chelsea and then draw Liverpool, won't they?
Yeah,
almost certainly. Yeah, but they've
nailed on, innit?
But they've knocked out Manchester City, they've knocked out Manchester United, and I think that that they have a very good opportunity, albeit, as we know, as I said, the record at Chelsea is not great and the volume of matches may catch up with them. But I think they have a really, really good opportunity to get in the second successive Carabao Cup semi-final.
Wonderful stuff. I think that's just about it. Anything else to add, George, before we go?
Absolutely not.
Fair play. Right then, I'd imagine, George, you're off to see how many coats you can wear around old London town this afternoon.
No, I've brought, I think I've brought three items of clothing that could be described as coats with me to London, a sort of a shirt jacket.
Nice.
But you could wear that outdoors, plus my heated coat. I need to recharge my battery after the weekend. That's a good thought. Plus the overcoat, so, and also a fleece.
Good Lord,
so,
you're going to be toasty warm.
With such a bourgeois coat, you'll fit in very well at Stamford Bridge, won't you? That's very much West London.
Is it
very
bourgeois?
Yeah, that's very bourgeois.
I think it's a reporter's coat. It's the 2023 version of John Motson's sheepskin jacket. I've just moved with the times. I've got a heated coat. I have to sit outside. I don't just sit outside for 90 minutes. I'm quite often outside for 3 hours. Is that true? Yeah, I'll just say it's true. I'm quite often outside for 3 hours and I have to be prepared. I'm professional. I'm prepared for all conditions.
Where does this end?
Environments.
Where does this end? 4 pairs of underpants, 5 pairs of socks, 2 pairs of jeans. What next? 5 belts?
I do have...
7 jaunty hats. Where does this finish, George? This is madness.
I do have thermal long johns and I do have a thermal t-shirt as well, but I haven't brought those with me because I'm not anticipating it being that hot, cold.
Brilliant. Oh, I have to mention something as well, actually. Somebody pulled me up last night, a listener to the podcast, and said, I need to point out the fact that you, Chris and George, all pronounce Joe Linton's name completely differently. Chris says Joe Linton.
Joe Linton.
I say Joe Linton. And George says Joe Linton.
Joe Linton, do I?
You say Joe Linton.
Joe Linton,
yeah.
Okay.
I say Joe Linton like it's Joseph Linton from Cramlington.
Yeah.
And Chris says a Joe Linton because he likes
Joe
to put a little...
Joe Linton. Yeah. Joe Linton is what Chris does, yeah.
Anyway.
Are we all wrong?
Almost certainly, yeah.
What is the actual pronunciation?
I think we need to ask Matt Ritchie, don't we?
Joe Linton!
Big Joe. We can just call him Big Joe from now on.
Big Joe, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right, then that's it. Get in touch at podonthetyne on Twitter or X and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's it. Thanks very much for your time, Chris.
Thank you very much, too. Toodaloo.
Toodaloo, indeed. And thank you as well, George Corgan.
Not a problem.
Good stuff. Right, thank you very much for listening. That's it for today. I will be back very, very soon. From everyone at Pod on the Tyne, goodbye.
Athletic.